Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Raindrops on roses and whiskers on kittens, bright copper kettles and warm woolen mittens, brown paper packages tied up with strings. These are a few of my favorite things.
Happy Throwback Thursday, everybody.
Happy Thursday.
Kevin, it's a beautiful day today.
It's a gorgeous summer day.
It's a gorgeous day here in Brigadoon.
The sun is smiling. The sun. An Irish high.
When Irish eyes are smiling.
Smiling.
Yeah, that's a little...
I like that.
Sorry.
Go pack the car.
Go pack the
car. I still think of the ferryman from last season in the Irish accents.
Pack the car.
Car.
That baby got some work. When act...
Truth.
So folks, for The Ferryman, if you've not seen The Ferryman, it's a three-act play. And when act three starts, you're in a blackout. And then all of a sudden the lights come up. And there's an infant laying on the stage.
Yes, I can't even imagine.
And you're like,
how you get a baby to do that.
And you're like, is that a doll? And then it starts kicking its legs. And you're like,
it's
just
real.
Left a baby on stage in the dark?
Yeah, a baby and, remember, a goose as well. For that one little scene, remember? There was a goose.
It's dangerous, folks.
Oh, my God.
It's absolutely dangerous.
Oh, my God.
I know the goose ate a baby. I'm bringing the goose up on charges.
Charges.
Are the animals part of a
charges.
Union?
What's that?
Are the animals part of a union? Like, are the animals part of Actors' Equity?
What about
that's
the
a legitimate question.
No, no, like, I can't imagine. Like the dogs from Legally Blonde, you think that's
like,
no.
It's like a,
but
a
is
dog
the baby?
Union. Is the baby part of a union? Can you imagine getting your equity card at like 9 months? Right now, there's a whole bunch
ask
of...
Ask Don Scardino.
Don was young. There's like a whole bunch of
like
English showcase graduates right now crying, being like,
the baby got the equity card and I didn't.
Just want my card.
I just thought my 16 bar cut of Love Will Find Me Again from Bandstand was going to get me an agent. Krasny office isn't calling.
Krasny was wrong when I came to New York in 2002 and I met with him and it was something straight out of a story. It was something straight out of the books. You know, it was like, it was in the building that's on 15, whatever on Times Square,
the big Broadway.
Go in there. You went to the something floor. You went down the office, smoky. He, you know, the secretary's like, oh, you can go in now. And you go in and he's this imposing, scary guy that was, he said, I remember my legs were crossed and he said to me, don't cross your legs. That's insecure. And I was like, no. Oh, I'm sorry. Yes. Yeah.
Did you sign with
those? Were the days? Absolutely not.
Who did you sign with?
I was with Stuart Talent for about over a decade.
Stuart Talent.
Yes.
Oh.
Yes. I was between Krasny, Stuart Talent, TGRW. I met with Jim Wilhelm.
Oh, I remember. Yeah, yeah. Jim Wilhelm.
I think
he's still around.
He sort of retired a little bit, but yeah. But yeah. No. My Stuart was just really nice and really friendly, and I just got a good vibe, so I went with him.
I always love May because that's Showcase Month.
And boy, it's a crazy time, isn't it?
You always get to see so many different showcases
and all the fresh blood come to New York and,
yeah.
And you know, with their dreams and
tons
everything.
Of jewel tone dresses and guys in tight V-necks trying to show off their muscles.
My God, back in my day, listen to me, but it was, we all wore black pants and a bright colored shirt that was tucked in. That was like what you
nice.
Did, which is just crazy now because would never, it's much, way more casual and way more just,
T-shirts and
it's very hipster. I saw a line of Equity people and I thought, oh my gosh, is this Williamsburg? What's
that's
going
what I
on?
Thought. I'm
yeah.
Like, where's the artisanal mayo shop? I'm in the wrong area again. I understand.
I have a question for you.
Yeah, what's up?
We asked this of all of our guests,
the
and
cheetah.
I don't know if I don't know if Robbie Rozelle asked us this when he interviewed us that you know
where's
a while
my money?
Ago for our anniversary. No, what was your gateway? How did you get into musical theater? What did it for you? Like, did you see a show? Were you a certain age? I know you loved the Tony Awards since you were basically in the womb, but do you remember having your first conscious thought about being turned on to musical theater or becoming passionate about it? Like, what was there a moment that you remember, or was it just sort of gradual? And maybe this is just a horrible question.
No. It's an easy question.
All I do is picture you in your basement listening to records, but I really want to know how you got there.
Hi, everybody.
I'm going to put my little needle
that's
on the
right.
record. When I played
on Preppies.
Preppies, which is
a
new thing.
Very obscure, very obscure LP.
Preppies is not a cute word for prep. Preppies is a 80s music.
Yeah, with like a lizard on it or something. Yeah.
With wearing a polo.
Yeah, wow. We killed that one
now. No, so anyway, how did I get into my gateway drug? Singing in the Rain. Singing in the Rain was my gateway
drug.
The movie. Yeah. When I was like 3 years old, my parents bought it. I think it just like had come out on just on VHS. Because that was, you know.
Oh, definitely.
They just bought a VCR, this newfangled contraption.
Oh, yes.
And I think if I remember correctly, that was the movie... I think that came with the VHS player, like wherever
they... movies used to come with them.
I think, if I understand correctly, there was some sort of deal or sale, and that was the movie that came along with it. Huh. And so they turned it on for me when I was three, and I was turned on ever since. No, I was going to say, for me, that is... When I hear people say, oh, it doesn't feel natural for me to see a story where somebody bursts into song and dance, for me, it feels totally natural because it's the only thing I've known.
One of the most iconic ones. And then what was the first live... do you remember your first live experience in the theater?
Yeah, it was either... There's some in the family history, there's some discrepancy.
Oh, okay.
It was... I think it was Le Cage.
Damn.
I think it was Le Cage. Wow. It was 1987, and it was my cousin Amy's birthday, and my family bought like a bunch of tickets to go see Le Cage. And it was Peter Marshall and Keene Curtis. It was like right on the end of the run. And I remember, that was entrancing. I remember there was one Cajel, and I was like maybe three and a half,
yeah,
four.
You were young.
And I just remembered she had this, it was a Theoni Ulrich costume, but it was this thing where it looked like a scarf or a cowl, and it just automatically, without even her touching it, flipped up around her, so it like created like a flower around her head. And I remember just being like, how did
magical
they do that? Like, how did they do that? Yep. And that's the big one for me. Or Me and My Girl. It was, I remember we went to go see Me and My Girl. Right. It was, I think, another like family event, and that was a big deal. I remember that was Jim Dale. Jim Dale was in it at that point.
That's nice.
Yeah. Cool. So those were the live performances.
I like that.
Yeah.
I like that a lot.
And then I wish, but I can't sing. I can't sing. If I could sing, I probably would have stayed as an actor and done musical theater because I always felt that I would be right in that world.
You can sing.
No, I really can't. I mean, everybody can sing.
You play sing, and you sing. I know you've got pitch, and I know you've got tone, and I know you can like color things and everything like that.
You're so sweet.
But I hear what you're saying. I understand what you're saying.
There's people out there that are better, and I think had I been able to master that, probably would have stayed an actor. I probably wouldn't have gone into directing. Huh. And then I've just done musical theater for the rest of my life.
And then Brad Oscar never would have had a career.
And then, so Brad.
Yeah, you're welcome.
You're welcome. And every once in a while, I still get the bug.
I like it.
I get the bug every once in a while. I'm like, maybe I'll get back on stage at some point.
I would like that. I would like that a lot.
But nobody wants to see that.
No, I do.
What was your gateway drug?
Well, thanks to my mother, and my father was very supportive, but my mother, there were three shows that we really were ever present in our household. My mother was a piano player, and so like she played Gypsy in college. She played in The Pit. And so that show had a very important impact on our lives. We grew up watching the movie with Rosalind Russell. I remember exactly where I was the first time I saw it. I think I was probably 8 or 9. Mom, correct me, I don't remember. And then we also grew up with constantly that VHS of the Mary Martin, Peter Pan, the stage version.
Yeah.
That was something that ran all the time in our household. And then the third show was Bye Bye Birdie, the movie with Leslie Ann Warren and Paul Lynde and like all of them. And was it Leslie Ann Warren? No.
Janet Leigh.
Sorry.
Janet Leigh.
Yes. Right.
Leslie Ann Warren was in Cinderella.
Sorry. I'm thinking of who is the sexy one and who plays
Anne
Kim
Margaret.
McAfee. Anne Margaret. Jeez, Kevin. I can picture that. Yes, that sexy opening. Oh, my goodness. Even as a kid, I was like, who is that? But we watched that constantly, my sister and I, and we loved it. And then my first show was when I was later in life that I really discovered my love for musical theater. I always appreciated it, but my love to do it or to consume all of it. But I think I was in middle school when I saw the high school production of Bye Bye Birdie and live, and I remember my seat, I remember where we were, and it was magical. I loved it. Oh. I absolutely loved that show. And even the movie, I know the movie's weird, like the whole sequence with Ed Sullivan where they like try that whole plot turn where they try to like
The defecting Russian
like,
conductor,
what
the heck? Turtle.
The turtle and like the going fast and the conducting off. I mean, what?
It was the 60s. Someone was on something.
We just watched it a couple months ago. It's nostalgic. I love it. I'll take it. It's fun for
weird
me.
Weird film. It's a lot of things that you probably couldn't get away with today. Like
never.
Make Janet Leigh a brunette and everyone will think she's Hispanic.
Exactly.
Okay. Paul Lynde is a father.
of married, you mean to a woman.
Married to a woman with kids.
Oh, boy. But thank goodness for these shows, these, and, you know, that really were so important to all of us. I mean, how many guests have we interviewed that they said, you know, they saw My Fair Lady, you know, or they saw, I mean, there's these shows that they all Follies or Pippin, you know, that we hear over and over. Even that Peter Pan, I mean, that was, so it's so, I think it's so important that we, that these get preserved in another way other than just seeing it live, but that you get to see live. Well, nowadays, they're everywhere. Even like TV shows like My Crazy Ex-Girlfriend is basically a musical TV show. So there's all these gateways into this art form now that I feel when we were growing up, there weren't as many, I feel like.
No, because
we were digging back decades earlier, like, Singing in the Rain.
I feel like back for us, we had to seek them out.
Yep.
And nowadays, you're absolutely right. I mean, it's on, you have Glee, or you had Glee and Smash, and even things like America's Got Talent, where you have somebody singing a show tune. I mean, obviously, it's like filtered through a contemporary, filter, but it's still a way of getting people interested in, and following it. But no, we have to dig, buddy boy.
We have to dig. Thank goodness we did.
Yeah, I'm happy we did.
Yes,
I'm happy
indeed.
We did. Otherwise, we wouldn't be doing this wonderful podcast known as Behind the Curtain, Broadway's Living Legends.
Nice.
Hey, you could have been sitting here with Brad Oscar. I love Brad.
I do,
too. Brad is, what I love about Brad is he's just as geeky as we are about this.
Yeah.
You know when we interviewed him? He came in, he kicked off his shoes and was just like, let's talk about this show.
He couldn't wait. Yeah.
Every time I do a show at 54 Below and I try to get Brad in it, I always email him, be like, are you available? And he always writes, but he goes, I'm not available. He's like, but let me know when you're doing Platinum.
hit show from the early 80s.
And
yes,
I always want to ask Brad, I'm like, is that a joke? Or like, do you really want to know?
Because
we're doing Platinum.
I'll take you up on that.
Because I'll take you up on it. I love Brad. He's such a talented
class
guy.
Class act.
Classy mm-hmm. guy.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
Kevin,
favorite things?
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Great. What is your favorite thing?
I would like to celebrate a person that I believe is, and I will include all of their catalog in this favorite thing, although I could pick a show and just do that. But I think this is sort of an unsung hero of the musical theater art form. He was very well known, he was actually in the 1950s the most successful songwriter in the U.S. and the U.K. on the singles chart. Because back then, in the 50s, before the Beatles, the pop tunes of the era were obviously show tunes, or these novelty songs. Songs such as, well, you're going to know as soon as I tell you, but like, How Much Is That Doggy in the Window, or Mambo Italiano, or there are a slew of others that you would know, yes.
Bob Merrill.
It is definitely Bob Merrill. Bob Merrill, who actually could not play an instrument, and he composed on a toy xylophone sometimes. He would have these songs in his heart and his head, and he would write them out. And some of his earlier shows, like, for instance, like his first show folks, you obviously know this, but some of you might not, but he wrote music, he wrote lyrics, may have written a book here or there. He wrote a TV show. He really had a diverse portfolio in the theater world and in other realms as well. But his first Broadway show where he wrote the music and lyrics was New Girl in Town, which starred Gwen Verdon and was choreographed by Bob Fosse, which if you watched Fosse Verdon, you saw a whole thing about that. He also wrote, in 2 years later, wrote Take Me Along, which is a musical version of Ah Wilderness, which I love that score. I think these scores are so charming. His most well-known work that he wrote, the music and lyrics, Erickson's Carnival in 1961 that had just a slew of great songs. But then he switched to writing the lyrics to Funny Girl. He added some songs to Dolly, Motherhood March and Elegance. He wrote your favorite TV show from 1965, the Dangerous Christmas of Little Red.
Yeah.
Breakfast at Tiffany's. He wrote the music and lyrics, and that never came to Broadway. But that had a really fascinating cast album, actually, because they Robbie Rozelle can tell us much more about this, and I think he has. But that album is kind of a choose-your-own-adventure, and I remember getting it and being, as I pushed my glasses up on my nose, being very excited about it because they had tried to fix that show, and Edward Albee came in and tried to do it, and then someone else. And then so the album has two different versions, and they have a track list. If you want to listen to the version that Albee did, you can do 1, 2, 7, 3, 10. You know, you listen to that order. If you want to do the original, you can listen to it this order. I think that's kind of fun. 1967, he wrote Henry Street Henry music and lyrics. One of my favorite flops that he wrote with Julie Stein is Pretty Bell. Pretty Bell, Pretty Bell. It's great, great little score. Sugar. If you want to have some fun, go listen to The New Girl in Town is charming. Take Me Along is charming. Carnival. Yes. Go listen to those shows. But really, I want to just shout out to Bob Merrill because he wrote so much and he had such an impact on the theater scene. And I don't think that his name is as synonymous as other names of that era are. So I wanted to celebrate Bob Merrill.
I agree wholeheartedly. I like Bob Merrill's work.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. It's of its era. I mean, it's definitely like a very sweet show tune type, you know, genre you might throw out there. But he really steadily wrote for the whole time. And I think that he had an impact on our art form. And I don't want to forget him.
No, and not only an impact on our art form, but his lyrics were able to actually transcend just our tiny little world and enter the popular culture. Like when you hear like people who need people, people will be able to fill in the blank of are the luckiest people in the world. So he transcended. I remember how much is that doggy in the window.
Right.
Yep. Good old Bob Merrill. And yeah, he did do stuff for Hello Dolly, which is like, but it's so
but it's out there.
Clear to tell which is it's clear to tell which is his and which is Jerry Herman's.
Yeah. My friend, what is your favorite thing?
I was going to start to sing Elegance.
Well, I would like you to sing since you think that you're not a singer, so
we got Elegance. That's it.
Oh.
That's
all I got. If it was Penny in a Pocket, he'd be singing much more of it, but
I put a penny in my pocket.
There it is.
And in a little time, that penny in my pocket had turned into a dime.
He has choreography too, you guys.
And in a little longer,
he's holding it. Nope, he just threw it out.
I put the quarter in a teapot, and I waited till the teapot had a dollar in its spout. There is choreo that goes along.
You know, you should see it. It's pretty.
I put the dollar in my mattress and had some pleasant dreams. And suddenly my mattress was boisting at the seams.
Boisting. It's giving me the,
And in a little longer. Yeah, so
the Yonkers. That's really good.
Well, you know, he is from Yonkers.
Right, it's authentic.
And if I was playing it opposite Tova Feldshaw, she'd be playing.
I was just going to say that.
With her Irish accent.
She would be giving you the authentic, and she would not be wearing a red dress. Oh, no. She's in mourning. She'd be wearing a black dress. That's right. That is correct. And if you don't know what we're talking about, listen to that interview.
Go on to YouTube and just put in Tova Feldshaw out of her mind, which is her show, which is really her show. She talks about it in there.
No, really.
Yeah, this is a real Tova Feldshaw out of my mind.
Feldshaw, yeah.
Or out of my mind.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Go there. Do it.
Yeah.
That could be a favorite thing in itself.
When she talks to you, like you just feel like lasers going through your body.
You're
She's
like
intense. She's
you're excited thing. And a little scared.
I wet myself. Not only when she spoke to me, but in the memory of
it's intense.
Of this, I would be very scared to be on stage with her just because I'd be like, my God, you're intimidating me.
Yeah,
but I'll hold my own with her.
Yes, you would, Rob. Yes, you would.
Come see us do last 5 years at the Pepper Pot Playhouse.
At the Muni, yes.
See,
that's where you
could
do it. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they look so young. They're too young.
It's over. James, come on.
I wouldn't want to see
her interpretation. I mean, she'd be like, well, I'm...
Things are going to break, folks. Things are going to break, and I'm nervous, but I love her so much. She was a fun guest.
Really
go
fun.
Back and listen to our interview with her. I thought she was fabulous and had so many interesting things to say about the world of acting. Mm-hmm. My favorite thing this week is something that I've watched so many times, and then I thought, you know, we've never talked about it on here. There was a television program in London called The South Bank Show. which was an interview program that was very, very popular in London, and they usually featured different subjects. Right. Usually people in the arts was the focus. And in 1980, they did a hour and a half documentary on the South Bank show about Sweeney Todd transferring from Broadway to the West End. Yes. Have you seen this before?
I've seen bits of it. It's good.
It's really good.
Yeah.
What I really like about it is I feel like they were given unfettered access to the creative team. I know there are so many times when we talk about how does a show get on, we all go back to Moon Over Broadway, the Moon Over Buffalo documentary with Carol Burnett. But the South Bank show version of Sweeney Todd is really fantastic because not only does it show people like Sondheim and Prince, it introduces us to people like Sheila Hancock, who was a very, very famous West End actress, and a wonderful actor that I think at one point will be my favorite thing, just not today, and that's Dennis Quilley, a very, very famous British actor who was like the British star of musical comedy in London. He did film and television. I'm right now, I'm so sorry, it's escaping me. I mean,
no, it's fine.
I mean, like what a big thing he did on film and TV, so you would be like, oh yeah, I know him. But he plays Sweeney Todd in this production. Now, ironically, this production was not well received in the West End. What we loved in America, they did not like over in England.
Not always surprising,
which makes sense.
We have different aesthetics sometimes.
Of course, but one of the cool things in this is you have a lot of Sondheim explaining to you what the score is, why he wrote something a certain way, why something is supposed to be like this. Hal Prince on the first day explaining how the set's going to work, what his concept of the show is. And one of my favorite things on this documentary, and keep an eye out for it, is the gentleman that they've hired to play Pirelli has just found out on the first day that they're cutting some Pirelli songs that were featured over on Broadway. And he's having a mental breakdown saying, like, if I had known that my part was going to be so small, I wouldn't have taken it, and I'm going to quit.
So, and it's not just talking heads, like,
like the
Into the Woods thing you can watch with Sondheim talking. So it's literally documentary rehearsal footage.
Yeah. And you see how the producers are explaining it to Hal Prince, and he's like, so let him go. He's like, let him go. We'll find somebody else. He's like, that's easy. We'll just let him go. Let him go. We'll find somebody else. And then the guy, of course, is like, I think I can make this work. I think I'll sing one song.
Wow.
Now, my Sweeney fans, you probably know this better than I do. I feel like Pirelli had two songs originally, right? There was one about pulling a tooth, and then there was one about the haircut, right? Or the shave, right? So, friends, I feel like in London, they cut the toothache. Pirelli used to extract a tooth. On stage. It was like a 4-minute number.
Huh.
And so that was cut because Hal Prince, like, this has nothing to do with the
show. What's going on?
It's just a guy pulling a tooth for 4 minutes. So Mr. Pirelli did not like that.
No.
I understand. Yeah. But anyway, but take a look at it. Like I said, it's on YouTube. All you have to type in is Sweeney Todd South Bank Show. Once again, Sweeney Todd South Bank Show. Somebody has posted it in its entirety. There's also somebody who's posted it in 10 little segments and increments. But it's really, really fantastic. And it's a look into not only Sondheim's process, but also into the process of Hal Prince in a rehearsal hall, which we don't really get to see all that much.
No.
So that's mine.
Good one. Really good one.
Yeah. Thank you.
Love that.
Thanks. So take a look at them, then listen to Bob Merrill.
Yeah, love it.
How much is that doggy in the window? What if he only wrote that? What if he only wrote the arf arf?
I just love I love the idea on his toy little xylophone. Be like, do, 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 do. I mean, anybody can be a composer, I guess, you know?
It's beautiful. Anybody can be a composer.
And I mean, I'm making it, that's dumbing it down completely because he then went on to write countless Broadway shows. And if he did it all on a toy xylophone, I mean, hey, Mel Brooks, he sang in the melody and then Glenn Kelly fleshed it all out and made a Broadway show. So, you know, hey, there you go. Anybody can do it. Write a Broadway show, you guys.
That's your assignment for next week, folks.
Write a show.
Send it to us.
Good luck.
Actually, just send it to Kevin.
Yeah.
Kevin loves demos. And
I do.
Kevin loves reading librettos. So just
throw
send
my
Kevin
way.
Everything.
Mm-hmm.
The more stuff you can send, Kevin likes first drafts, second drafts, you singing off key.
You know what I want to start doing, actually?
What?
I want to start every week or every other week, if we talk about a flop or a lesser known show or even a good demo of something, I want to record, I want to play the piano and sing a song of it and like put it on like Instagram, on our Instagram as like a little clip of it to say, hey, this is a forgotten song, you know, check it out. You know,
will yours be Ciao Campari from Breakfast at Tiffany's? Sung by Ron Raines.
But that would be an example.
Not for now.
Or Night of the Hunter. There could be a song from that, speaking Night of Ron Reims, you know? So that, oh, those kinds of, that's what I mean. I'm thinking, just to throw that out there, I want to do a little offshoot, so we might add that at some point.
Can we sing I'm Naive, cut from Sugar, but in Bob Merrill's Little Red?
Yes, definitely.
Thank you.
Okay.
Then I'm happy. See
and
everybody.
That's all. Bye-bye.
Raindrops on roses and whiskers on kittens, bright copper kettles and warm woolen mittens, brown paper packages tied up with strings. These are a few of my favorite things.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.